This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those joining us at TSN1290.ca, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Summer is over, and we return to our usual 12 noon start time from here on out. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday afternoon. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Coming up on the show in about 30 minutes' time, live from Penticton, British Columbia, the site of the Young Stars Tournament, Dennis Bayak, the voice of the Winnipeg Jets on TSN Jets and here on TSN 1290 is going to join us. A little bit later on, George Johnson, columnist with the Calgary Herald, is going to join us to talk about the hiring of Brian Burke in Calgary. And then Scott Powers from ESPNChicago.com is going to join us to talk about some of the contract extensions the Chicago Blackhawks handed out earlier this week to Corey Crawford and Nicholas Chalmerson. You can get in touch with us on Twitter, at IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest NHL and Winnipeg Jets news is www.IllegalCurve.com. Boys, Richie, Ezzy, first and foremost, a happy new year to you both.
Yeah, happy new year to you boys. We're back. We haven't had a show with the three of us in a while. But, you know, obviously it's exciting that training camp is just around the corner. We actually have some hockey on the ice to talk about, even though it's Young Stars and it's not exhibition or regular season. It's still hockey on the ice, and, you know, we have a lot to talk about. So I guess we got to get right to it, right?
Absolutely. Richie?
Yeah, good morning, boys. Happy to be back in the saddle here at the 12 o'clock start time, and obviously that means that the season's around the corner. So I certainly can't wait, and I think I can speak for all of us that all of us really can't wait to get this season underway. Only a couple of days until training camp, and another go at it.
Yeah, another year. It's amazing. This is year three already for the Winnipeg Jets 2.0 version to be back here in the Winnipeg. It seems like it was just yesterday that the announcement was made that the team was returning, but that's obviously been 3 years down the road somehow, some way. Anyways, last night in Penticton, the Jets Young Stars defeated the San Jose Sharks Young Stars by a 5-3 margin. You know, the Jets, again, they'll play tonight. I believe the game time is, 7:30 Winnipeg time. I'll double check on that one, actually. I'm not 100% sure what time it is, but the game will be here on TSN.
9:30
Winnipeg time. Okay, sorry, that's right. 7:30 in Penticton, 9:30 time here, start time here on TSN 1290. You know, how much can you take from this tournament, in your opinion, guys?
You know, Drew, I don't think too much. I think what happens here in all these tournaments and the way sports are these days is that events that were probably not paid much attention in the past are paid far too much attention now. Like the rookie tournaments, you see all the highlights on TV and such. I mean, in reality, you know what these guys are. I mean, I don't need to know what Mark Scheifele can do against rookies. I need to know what Mark Scheifele can do against NHL regulars. That's what I need to know. So this tournament maybe may help for some other players and give some other players, younger guys, an opportunity who maybe aren't on the radar necessarily. But I think big picture-wise, if you're getting excited about the way one guy looked or the way another guy looked in these games, I think you need to just take a step back and say, okay, let's detail the competition. Let's examine exactly, you know, the situation, and let's say, okay, when it gets to the bigger stakes, even the preseason, which is hard to analyze because the best players aren't necessarily out there and they're maybe not giving 100% and they're working on certain parts of their game, that has more value than this. So I think it is, everybody has this insatiable desire to watch hockey and talk about hockey. Obviously, we're amongst that group. At the top of that group, really, we could talk about it all day. But these rookie tournaments have very little meaning, I think, in the big scheme of things. I think people need to just pull it back a little bit when we're looking at this stuff.
Richie, it's all about evaluation. For fans, it's nice to see the Winnipeg Jets on the ice. It's nice to see the last 3 years of draft picks actually on the ice. So for fans that really want to see Jacob Trouba and Mark Scheifele, and not just the guys that are probably going to make the Jets this year, a guy like J.C. LePon and Nick Petan and other guys. Scott Kosmachuk had the game-winning goal. He had a good season in Belleville last year. And this year, Guelph. And this year, he, you know, is a guy who probably will play in the AHL. But for Claude Noel, for Kevin Cheveldayoff, for Craig Heisinger, this tournament is all about an opportunity to watch these guys play, see how they've improved a little bit since their seasons ended last year, and, you know, see different line combinations, things of that nature. And that's what it's really all about. For fans, it's great because I think you're seeing 3 or 4 years down the road what the Jets could look like. And, you know, there's a good chance that a lot of these guys end up making the team. A lot of these guys will not play on the team. But for especially some of the draft picks that were made this past year, I think this past year's draft was arguably the best out of the three. You know, when you look at Nick Petan and J.C. LePon and Josh Morrissey, you look at some of the really people are saying that these are steals, not to mention Jacob Trouba, who at where he was drafted in 2012 looks like a really good draft pick based on where he was drafted. So it's really evaluation. But for fans, it's obviously exciting because it's a precursor to training camp. But for all intents and purposes, for the Jets organization, it's obviously just an opportunity to evaluate even further. Because like we talked about before, the Jets development camp, that was not a real, you know, good indicator of what these guys are capable of. Once you put them on the ice with peers in a 5-on-5 situation, then you can see a little bit more about what they're all about. And
but even that is, you've seen these guys against their peers before, World
right.
Juniors and playoffs in the CHL and Dub in all those leagues. So you have an idea. What you want to know is how they play against guys who are above them.
It's a lot easier to play against the 19, 20-year-old than it is to play against the 27, 28-year-olds that are making up the majority of your NHL competition. I mean, you know, it's nice when all these guys perform well, and Brendan Kitchen had a very good game yesterday, and, I mean, he's a guy the Jets, you know, drafted and signed. You know, a lot of these guys had nice games, but, you know, do it against the Duncan Keiths of the NHL. Do it against the Sidney Crosbys.
And, well, it's not, you know, it's not even that, Drew, in the sense that, you know, they're going to protect a guy like Scheifele and even Trouba against these top competition guys. But it's just even the lesser guys, the bigger, stronger guys. And that's – so
– Do it against men.
Yeah, is there something to read into? And also, you're talking about what? How many games are there even in this tournament?
Three.
So, I mean, you really don't have a big sample there in terms of how the guy's playing. He's off for a week. He's not feeling well. Boom.
Sure.
So it's nice. It gets the team together. It's good for chemistry building, as he mentioned, and good to, you know, as an organization. As an organization, I think the rookie tournament's great. I think some people overvalue the importance of it in the big scheme of things.
Right, so it's great. You know, that the Jets beat the San Jose Sharks rookies last year 5-3, but it's probably better that you're getting to see the 2013 draft picks play with the 2012 draft picks. And,
yeah, sure,
and you're seeing the future of the Jets because, you know, when the Atlanta Thrashers came over, and this is a hat tip to Chevy and Marcel Como, all the scouts, the whole Jets organization, the Jets have a good stable of young prospects now. If you look at some of these guys that are going to play in the AHL, whether it's Adam Lowry or Scott Kosmachuk, who had a couple goals yesterday, they're starting to, you know, develop some good prospects here, and that's what people should be excited about, that you're seeing kind of the future stars of the Jets, or at least the young stars of the Jets, and that we're starting to build up a good prospect system here, because When the Thrashers came over, the cupboard was pretty bare, I got to tell you.
Yeah, well, the difference is I think that the depth in the organization is improved so much that when and if they have to call up somebody from the AHL, it's not likely that it's going to be a guy who's pretty much going to be a career in an AHL. I think it's safe to say, look at a guy like Patrice Cormier now, when he gets the call up from the Jets, this is a guy who's going to spend the majority of his career probably in the AHL. I don't think he's going to develop beyond anything he already is as an NHL player or as a hockey player. But when you have a guy like Adam Lowry playing in the AHL and you call him up, this is a guy that you expect is going to join your team and at some point in time in the next year or two could be a career NHLer. Ivan Telegin, another guy who got healthy and played yesterday. That's the difference, is the call-ups aren't these middling prospects anymore. They're guys that have a future with the organization.
Right. They're guys who are entering their first year in the AHL, or Ivan Telegin's case, his first full season with the St. John's Ice Caps. He had the injury problems last year, but the Jets have developed a nice group of draft picks over the last 3 years, and I think that they've really increased their stock, and, you know, that's a hat tip to the organization, but it's you know, a good opportunity, because last year there was no Young Stars tournament and there was no training camp. So now this is we're starting to see, you know, what a regular NHL season for the Jets is going to be.
Sure. And you know, from like you said, I'm a lot more interested, though, to see some of these young stars or these, you know, see them perform in exhibition games starting in, you know, about 10 days or so when they have to play against other sort of bona fide NHL talent. You know, let me see, you know, I want to see Scheifele against against NHL players. I want to see Lucas Sutter against NHL players. And I can take a lot more from that than I think I'll ever be able to take from seeing those guys against against the San Jose Sharks young stars.
Yeah, Sharks don't have a great system either. I mean, that's irrelevant, really, in the big scheme of things. But
you're right, yeah. Any team. I mean, you know, show me a 20-year-old kid against the 27-year-old career NHLer. That's, and you see, let me see if that kid can you know, pass the mustard, if he can cut the mustard to be able to perform against that player. Let me see Adam Lowry in that situation way more than let me see Adam Lowry against, you know, whoever the San Jose Sharks young stars are.
Right, Drew, and that's going to ultimately determine if one of these younger players will get a chance to start the season in the NHL. You're talking about a guy like Ivan Telegin. Will he be given a chance, maybe, you know, to play third or fourth line wing? His chances aren't very good, but if he performs better in an exhibition game, whether it's versus Edmonton or Ottawa, like you said, that will have a lot more of an impact on whether he makes the team, as opposed to, you know, as a 22-year-old playing against 19 and 18-year-olds, right? So this is, you obviously have to take it with a grain of salt. But really, you know, getting back to it, after, you know, a long summer, it's just great to see the future Jets on the ice, you know, competing against other teams' young prospects. That's really, you know, in a simplified way, what you should take from this.
Yeah, I would agree with that statement exactly. I mean, you can read too much into it, but at least they're talking about something other than, you know, a middle of the summer, relatively dry period. You're talking about on ice performance, which is a lot nicer than the alternative, given that we just finished up the summer months here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Right, I'm pretty sure when we were filling in for Hustler and Lawless, we were talking about, you know, Mark Scheifele's you know, weight gain. So now we already know that he's put on some weight, and now we can start to evaluate his on ice performance.
Sure. How? Yeah, exactly. What's happening to his on ice game based on that weight gain, as opposed to anything else? We're going to spend the next couple segments, or really a lot of the next hour, talking about the Winnipeg Jets line combinations entering training camp, which gets underway with physicals for the players on Wednesday. So why don't we go to break, and when we come back, we're going to start talking about the forwards. Dennis Bayak still to come to us, joining us from Penticton. Lots of Jets talk ahead. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Coming up next segment, Dennis Bayak joining us live from the Young Stars Tournament in Penticton, British Columbia. Programming note, next Saturday is, of course, Yom Kippur, the Jewish Day of Atonement, and the three of us certainly have a lot to atone for over the past year, so we're going to be taking next Saturday off, so no Illegal Curve Hockey Show next Saturday. We return all new and all repented on September the 21st.
And if anybody asks why Illegal Curve isn't on air, obviously it's because of the Jewish holiday Yom Kippur, and we've decided to co-fax.
Yes, we're co-faxing next week.
If anybody's watched Curb Your Enthusiasm, you'll know what that means, of course.
Or know who Sandy Koufax is, for that matter.
The great pitcher Sandy Koufax. So. Yeah.
Anyways, let's talk about the Winnipeg Jets forward lines entering into training camp, which gets underway next week. Mm-hmm. I know that we've had this, Ezzy and I have had this conversation off air probably multiple times. I think we probably had it on air. To me, looking at the Jets forward lines, the key to success for the Winnipeg Jets in the upcoming 2013-2014 season is Mark Scheifele being able to fill that second line center role. I think if he isn't able to fill that role pretty much for the entire year and successfully pull it off, this team isn't a playoff team. If he is able to fill that role, then they have a good chance at making the playoffs in the new revised, you know, Western Conference, whatever it's called.
Okay, and we have talked about this, and we talked about it on Hustler and Lawless as well. And I think you have a good point there. And if you think about it, what Jets fans are probably talking about most around the water cooler, or, you know, while they're having a beverage on the weekend, is Mark Scheifele's role on this team. Jacob Trouba's role on this team, in addition to the additions that the Jets have made, Devin Setoguchi, Michael Frolik, and others. My opinion on this, and again, the ultimate decision on where Mark Scheifele plays is up to Claude Noel and the coaching staff. And he's the only one that will ultimately make that decision. And what my argument or my position has been on Mark Scheifele is, this year he's simply trying to make it as an everyday NHLer. And we asked him this when we interviewed him a couple of weeks ago on HNL. And he said he's basically willing to do whatever it takes. Now, I think that it's quite possible, Richie, that Mark Scheifele spends some time as the second line center. But I think, you know, as is the case for a lot of 20-year-old NHL rookies, there will be peaks and valleys, ebbs mm-hmm. and flows, mm-hmm. and it's going to be tough for him to stay there. And I think when you consider that you have Olli Jokinen making $4.5 million a year, a guy who was brought in to be a scorer, a guy who was brought in to give you that size and scoring in the second line center role, I think you're going to run into problems if you're bumping him down to the third line. And that's why I wouldn't be surprised. I'm not, by the way, for all the listeners and for you guys, I by no means am I not saying that Mark Scheifele can't be the second line center. I think he has the ability. He's you know, been lighting it up for Barry in the OHL. He was great at the World Junior Tournament. He's, you know, been training. I just think that it's unrealistic to expect Mark Scheifele to play 82 games as the second line center in the Western Conference this year. That's my main point. I'm not saying that he won't be given a chance there. I will be surprised if he plays the entire season as the second line center and doesn't play, you know, on the third line or on the fourth line at various points. That's kind of been my position.
You get to a point of roster construction, right? You look at this forward group and you say, okay, what do we have? You know, we have our first line, Ladd, Little, and Wheeler, who by all indications don't like playing apart from each other. Mm-hmm. So that'll be your first line. Then they have good chemistry. So that'll be your first line. Then you look at your second line. You have Evander Kane is your clear-cut number two left winger. And then on the right side, you have Devin Setoguchi is probably your clear-cut second line right winger in terms of talent. So on the left side, you have a guy in Kane who is a great skater, powerful guy, really good wrist shot, scorer, can't really pass.
Can't really pay parking tickets either.
Yeah, that's for another day. On the right side, you have a guy in Setoguchi who is a really good skater as well and is a really good shooter. Not going to be the best passer either. So you have two guys who can snipe. In the middle, and I think to Drew's point, you have Mark Scheifele. Mark Scheifele is a guy who's apparently improved his skating a bit, is a good passer, sees the ice really well. Not going to be a 40-goal scorer, but has capabilities of being a good player. And he's a passer. So I think he logically fits in on the second line as much because of his potential as the fact that the Jets don't have somebody who can fill that slot. Because Olli Jokinen, as your second line center, puts three guys on the second line who aren't good passers, right? Olli Jokinen's got tunnel vision. He sees the ice forward. He can't really see it sideways in the sense that
north-south.
He's not a great passer. So you can't have a guy in Jokinen who's not a great passer with a guy like Kane. Clearly last year demonstrated that they cannot play together. And then you have Setoguchi, who I don't think necessarily would complement that group. Maybe it would. Maybe I'm wrong. But I don't think so. So in that sense, Jokinen, as a default, gets pushed to your third line. So if the Scheifele as a rookie isn't able to fill that role, and that's a high-pressure role, as you mentioned, in a difficult division, in a difficult league to play in, he's got to have that role. Now, he has good support if he's put in that line. The two guys who've scored 30 goals before. Okay, but how does he fare in the faceoff circle? How does he fare defensive responsibilities? Young guys have trouble in the faceoff circle. Young guys have trouble with defensive responsibilities. So how do you manage that? Then you have Jokinen who pushes down to a third line role. And Jokinen's not great in the faceoff circle. How will Scheifele be in the faceoff circle? Little's a little bit above average at times in the faceoff circle, and Slater's pretty good. But you're not killing it down the middle there. So, and then who do you complement Jokinen with? Well, you have a guy like Frolik who's going to be your third line right winger. He can skate, he can shoot a bit. I like Frolik's game. I have no problem with Frolik. The left wing, I mean, are you going to put Tangrady or are you going to put James Wright? So when you get deep into the roster, you realize the flaws that are in it. The Jets have a lot of good players, but do they fit together? I think that's the question. I think that's the same thing about defense, which we'll talk about after Dennis Baek comes on. Is this team a good mix, or is it just a mix of talent?
Well, And that's my point to Shifley, because you were talking about how do the pieces all fit together. And on that second line, the key to that, to Kane and Setoguchi fitting together, is Mark Shifley, in my opinion. He's the puzzle piece that fills out that second line.
Well, again, but to my point, you really don't have much of an alternative, do you?
Well, I mean, you don't.
Well, who else? If Jokinen doesn't play there, who else is playing there?
They don't have an alternative. That's why, to me, the key to the Jets' success and the linchpin to the Jets' success this year is Mark Scheifele.
I think that it's part of it. But you've also got a third line last year that wasn't very successful. You've got a penalty-killing unit that wasn't successful. Hello, does everybody remember how putrid the power play was last year? I mean, there's tons of things that the Jets have to improve on if they want to be a playoff team. They have to allow less goals. Andre Pavlik's conditioning and performance has to be better. I mean, yes, Drew, Mark Scheifele arguably is one of the most important keys to the Jets season, but I don't think it's the be all and end all. I think it's just part of it. Everything's got to come into play for the Jets to make the playoffs this year. And you know, back to the center position, you only have four natural centers. You've got Jim Slater.
That's right.
You've got Brian Little. You've got Olli Jokinen, and you've got Mark Scheifele, and that's it. Mm-hmm. So are you going to ask someone else to play center?
Well, let's go through this. Okay, I like to go through it in this fashion. Let's go through your division. Okay. Who do you have up the middle in St. Louis? You could have David Backes, you have Patrick Berglund, you have Roy, depending on where they want to play Roy. In Colorado, you have Stasny, and you have Deshane, and you have O'Reilly, and you have McKinnon. Right? Chicago, you know, their second line center role has always kind of been a hole for them, but they have so much talent elsewhere that they can make it work. So whoever's playing that second line center role, you have Jonathan Toews, arguably the best center in the league, you could argue, in the middle. Right? So then you look at the other teams in the division, and it's difficult. It's difficult to compete with center being a weakness. So you really do need, as you mentioned, Drew, Scheifele, somebody to step up, and who else will it be? I mean, the guys, you know, Kane's not playing. None of these wingers are really playing center, let's be honest. I mean, none of the wingers here are flex guys who are playing center. So that's, you know, it's not like a Nathan Horton who can play center if you need him to, but isn't really a center. Right, like Taylor Hall starting the season apparently at center in Edmonton. He can play center, but he's not really a center. He doesn't like to play center. The Jets don't really have that guy, so that's an issue too. And it's tough to be weaker up the middle. And the Jets aren't right. That deep up the middle. They spend a fair amount of money up the middle, but they're not that strong up the middle.
And that's why, to me, Mark Scheifele is the key. It's just that if he doesn't fill that role successfully, it blows all the other plans or all the other slotting assignments, it blows it to hell. If Mark Scheifele can't be a second-line center, and maybe he can only be a third-line winger, it just screws up their entire roster.
And there aren't that many slotting combinations, as we just talked about. So Mark Scheifele is either going to play, essentially you could break it down to three positions, maybe four. He's going to be the second-line center. Mm-hmm. He's going to be the third-line center,
right.
Fourth-line center, or on the wing of the – he Mark Scheifele will not be on the first line because Ladd Little and Wheeler
right. –
I mean, Blake Wheeler and Brian Little just signed contract extensions and have now been locked up as the core of the future of this team, as Andrew Ladd is, the captain, and he's under contract for three more years. I mean, that's the core. That's your top line. So right now – and we're going to see this in training camp. We'll talk to Dennis about it coming right up. But, you know, Mark Scheifele is going to be given every opportunity to make this team. And I'm sure, as he's told us, he would be willing to play the wing on any one of the lines or center on any one of the lines. But, yeah, if he's able to click with Evander Kane and Devin Setoguchi, and they're able to find chemistry in training camp and in the preseason – that could be the difference between the Jets making the playoffs or not making the playoffs.
Because everything else goes together, for better or worse, everything else goes together, and you know where everybody else is going to land as long as Scheifele can play that role.
Yeah, you could see a guy like Frolik and Setoguchi flip, or even like Frolik maybe move to the left if they need him to, because he's a left-handed shooting guy on the right side. But yeah, more or less, I agree with that.
My money, and I don't have a lot of money, would be on Mark Scheifele playing during the season this year. This is my personal opinion. I think you'll see him playing on all of the second, third, and fourth lines. And I hope, just like you're saying, I would love it for Mark Scheifele to be the everyday second line center. I just think that it's more realistic that he'll play on second line part of the time, third line, maybe even the fourth line if he's struggling.
Cautionary note: Evander Kane is a very talented player. We've talked about his talent on this show many times before. Evander Kane is not an easy guy to play with because of the style. Mm-hmm. And it's a style of he's a scorer, but he likes the puck on his stick. Whereas he's not a one shot, we've talked about it on the show many times, he's not a one shot scorer, meaning a guy like a Steven Stamkos or a guy, you know, even like a Michael Ryder, they get to their point and they shoot it, they have a good wrist shot or a good slap shot. Evander Kane's got a good wrist shot, but he likes to skate with it and take that shot. So don't say Mark Scheifele, if you see Mark Scheifele not clicking with Evander Kane, don't say Mark Scheifele's the best. Say, well, maybe he'd click with somebody else. So it's, patience is going to be important, but I do agree, Drew, in terms of success of the team for this season, that's his. Mark Scheifele needs to be an important part of this team.
Let's go to break. When we come back, Dennis Bayak live from the Young Stars Tournament in Penticton, British Columbia. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's the voice of the Winnipeg Jets on TSN Jets, and you also hear him here on TSN 1290. Dennis Bayak, how are you, my friend?
I'm good, guys. How are you? How was your summer?
Summer was very good. It was, not quite long enough in terms of, you know, weather and relaxing, but it was long enough in terms of hockey being in the off season.
Well, it's always good to get back at it. This time of the year is always exciting. I know when I was involved in junior hockey, you always looked forward to training camp because you got a chance to see all your scouts, you got a chance to see all your young prospects, and I'm sure that's what the Winnipeg Jets coaches and management people are going through the last couple of days as all the young guys have reconvened. I know talking to Coach Claude Noel yesterday, he's really looking forward to not only what he's seeing in Penticton, but more getting back to Winnipeg and next week getting back to his group.
Absolutely. Young Stars Tournament taking place in Penticton. The second game will be heard tonight here on TSN 1290. Dennis, how much stock do you put into this tournament, you know, regarding the performance of players?
Well, you know what, and maybe this is a fault of the hockey world or the sports world, but I think you need to dwell on the positives more than the negatives. I think you can get an idea of what raw talent some of these players have, because they haven't been indoctrinated into your system. They don't know how you like your breakouts. They don't know what you want in your power play, because they really haven't had a chance to work on any of that. So you're just watching their raw skill. And the other thing you have to keep in mind is some guys have been on the ice lots in the last 3 weeks, and some guys have not been on the ice very much the last 3 weeks. So you kind of have to take that into consideration as well. So I know when I was involved, and I'm sure that's the way it is with most of the teams, you look more for the positives. Just if somebody has a bad game or two bad games, I don't think that you cross them off your list or whatever the case may be. But you really do get an idea of how guys think the game and how quick they react to certain situations.
Dennis, we were talking about Mark Scheifele last segment, and you know he's obviously at the Young Stars Tournament over in Penticton. What do you make of, I guess, you know, his maturation, I guess physical maturation, and what do you see as being important for him in this tournament?
Well, the thing with Mark Scheifele is Mark Scheifele has to realize he's not going to make the team in Penticton, and he's not going to not make the team in Penticton. So he has to look at this as not a 3-day tournament or even a week-long event. Mark Scheifele has to look at this as, okay, I'm going to have this tournament. I'm going to have maybe six, maybe five preseason games that I'm going to play in. That's what I have to look at as my long-term goal here. I have to look at October 1st as the date, you know, that a decision may or may not be made. At the same time, he wants to impress. He wants everybody to look back and say, hey, Mark Scheifele is really going to have an opportunity to make our team this year. So I think as far as this tournament is concerned, just work on the little things, work on your timing, work on your skating. He put on some weight over the summer. Make sure that you can handle that. He worked hard at the Gary Roberts School all summer. And then when you get back to Winnipeg next week and get back with the big guys, make sure that you're at the top of your game and you're ready to go. To me, Mark Scheifele, you know, he wasn't terrific last night, and he certainly wasn't bad last night. The thing you worry about with Mark Scheifele is what I just said, is that he's going to try too hard to impress right off the bat. But I really believe Mark Scheifele is the kind of guy that as main camp gets going, he's going to look better as he plays with better people.
Dennis, the next big guy we want to ask you about is, of course, Jacob Trouba. You saw him practice last year after he signed his entry-level deal. He obviously didn't get into any game action. How did Jacob Trouba look last night against the San Jose Sharks in Penticton?
He was fine. And again, he falls into the same category as Mark Scheifele. Just, you know, don't try and do too much in this tournament because you're just going to get yourself where now you start to question yourself with every little thing that doesn't go for you. And don't underestimate the opponents because every team has some very good players, very good young people in this tournament. So he was very good last night. There seems to be some chemistry between him and Josh Morrissey, which I think going forward down the years for the Winnipeg Jets organization could be a very, very good defensive tandem. But, you know, he skates good, he shoots the puck good, and, you know, he had some physicality to his game last night, which I think was good. So, but he's another guy that just make sure that when main camp starts next week, use this as your preparation, and when main camp gets going, make sure that that you're ready to go, because I really firmly believe there will be a spot on the roster for both Mark Scheifele and Jacob Trouba.
We're joined by Dennis Bayak, the voice of the Winnipeg Jets here on TSN Jets and TSN 1290. You'll hear him call the Jets game tonight in the Young Stars competition in Penticton, British Columbia. Dennis, you mentioned Josh Morrissey. How has he looked, and you know, how has he, along with the other 2013 draft picks, looked?
Well, I really liked his IQ. I mean, his natural ability is there. It's very evident when you watch him skate, when you watch him handle a puck, you watch him jump into the play. And that's the impressive thing with these young guys, and they've all been told that. Come in and do what you do well. Don't sit back. If you're an offensive guy, don't sit back and be cautious. Do what got you here. Do what got you drafted. And we saw that from him last night, and really liked the way he skates. Takes the opportunity if the opportunity is there to jump up and be physical. But the rest of the young guys, you know, Kitchen was another guy that, you know, was drafted 5 years in the Western Hockey League, comes with a pedigree, Western Hockey League Defenseman of the Year. He showed his offensive skills. But there were some other guys that weren't drafted that really, you know, have a chance here as unrestricted free agents to come in here and try and show somebody that they deserve a serious look. And I thought Mitchell Theoret had a real good game. That line was good. But they were really impressed. I know talking to some of the Jets people last night, they were really impressed what they saw again from Nicholas Petan. J.C. Lapointe brings what he does. He plays with a bit of an edge. So looking at the young guys, especially the guys that were drafted this past summer, I think the Jets people were very happy with what they saw from them last night. It was unfortunate that you know, Jimmy Lodge got hurt at the U.S. development camp because I know they would have liked to have taken a real close look at him, another one of their draft picks. I had the fortune this past summer of golfing with one of the people that is involved with Saginaw of the OHL, and they spoke very highly of Jimmy Lodge. So it would have been nice to see him here, but unfortunately he's banged up and it wasn't going to happen. But for the most part, you know what, there's two more games to be played. But I know there were some smiles on some of the faces of the Jets people last night, and rightfully so.
Dennis, we wanted to move away from the Young Stars tournament and talk to you a little bit about some of the off-season moves that Kevin Cheveldayoff made. We haven't spoken to you since the Jets season ended back in April, and the Jets, along with you know, drafting players at the 2013 draft, have made some off-season acquisitions, including Devin Setoguchi, Michael Frolik, and others. What was your impression of some of those moves, and how are they going to fit into some of those different forward line combinations that at this point are really undetermined?
Well, they basically added a complete forward line, if you want to look at it. They won't play as a unit, I don't think, and that being Setoguchi, Halaschuk, and Frolik. So, I mean, they're all wingers. Frolik can play either side. Halaschuk and Setoguchi are better on the right side. All three have shown in the past that there is some offensive punch to their game. And whether the Jets can rekindle some of that, especially in Folik's case, because his first 2 years in the league, he was a very good scorer. And then when he went to Chicago, his role kind of changed. Again, I don't think we can look at Folik and Halaschuk to score you 20 goals, but if they can chip in with 10, 12 goals, 15 goals, I think that's really going to help the offense. Because, they have to take some of the load off the Wheeler, Little, and Ladd line, because last year, if that line didn't score, the Jets really had trouble winning hockey games. And you need to get some pop offensively from some of the other people. And Setoguchi is a guy that can bring that. I mean, over the years in the National Hockey League, he has been a guy that has shown he can really shoot the puck. He had the one great year in San Jose, and we played with some good people there. So we'll see how he fits into Winnipeg. But, I mean, when you break down the lines, I mean, you leave that top line as is, and then you've got a bit of a battle going on for the number two centerman spot, if you want to look at it that way, between Olli Jokinen and Mark Scheifele. And, Olli Jokinen, admits that he didn't have a very good year last year and has put pressure on himself to come back and do a lot more positive things this year. So, if you wanted to look at that second line, you look at Jokinen between Kane and Setoguchi, and then after that it gets interesting. You'd have to think that Frolik will get a real good chance on that third line. That's probably where he fits in. And then you've got Scheifele or Jokinen in there. Halaschuk is a guy that, from talking to some of the Nashville people, if he can stay healthy, here's a guy that can really play, but he's not a big guy, and he really plays the game hard and sometimes bangs himself up because of that. But, I really like those three guys. They're all right-hand shots. An area that the Jets were kind of weak in last year was on that right-hand side. But if those three guys can bring a little more offensive pop, then I think the Jets would have accomplished over the offseason what they set out to do.
You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. We're joined by the voice of the Winnipeg Jets on TSN Jets, Dennis Bayak.
And Dennis, you mentioned battles. I think when a good team has a lot of training camp battles, depth demonstrates that they can have different guys fill different roles, and they're able to, put some guys upstairs who can fill in when need be. You mentioned the battle for that second-line center spot with Olli Jokinen and Mark Scheifele. Are there any battles on the back end that you're focused on?
Well, I think we're going to, because when you start breaking it down, even if you want to finish off the forward lines, I mean, you've got guys we haven't talked about. You've got Wright, Tangrady, Thorburn, Peluso, Telegan, Odell, if they want to give him a real good look. He had some offensive pop last year in St. John's. So there's going to be some competition for some forward positions as well. On the back end, you look at guys like Trouba. We talked about him. He's going to be in a battle. They signed Adam Party, who brings some size, brings a little bit more experience. Then you've got Paul Postma. Then you've got Zach Redmond. And that's falling in behind the Bogosians and the Stewarts and the Bufflins and the Enstrom. So there's going to be some competition on the back end. And believe me, you guys know this. I mean, players have a depth chart in their mind. If it's not written down, they have one in their mind. And they know who they're up against, and they know who they have to try and beat out for a spot. So, but you're right. Competition is very healthy. That's what you want. And I think for the first time from a Jets standpoint anyway, we're seeing that. And they don't have to go out and fill in spots with unrestricted free agents. They didn't have to do that that's why they didn't re-sign Nick Antropov. That's why they haven't re-signed Kyle Wellwood, is because they feel they have people in the organization with some of the people they brought in this summer and some of the people that deserve a look. That Cormier is another guy that falls in there someplace as far as the forward lines are concerned. So it's going to be healthy competition, and that's something you have to have.
Dennis, as you know, Claude Noel has always preached a commitment to team defense, and now heading into training camp, some players have basically not been brought back, and other players have been brought in. Is it your belief that overall, looking at the Jets heading into training camp and into this season, that this team is actually going to have a greater commitment to team defense?
Agree, 100%. And I think the stats will bear that out. When you look at the goals against, that's always been a concern for the Winnipeg Jets. And whether you're talking about the netminders, whether you're talking about the defensive core, or as you just mentioned, the entire team in a defensive mode, because there was only three teams in the Eastern Conference last year that had more goals against than the Jets, and only two teams in the Western Conference where the Jets are going to play this year. So You have to look at those stats, and you can't put everything in the numbers, but that is a stat that keeps jumping out at you, that they have to be better in the goals against department. And that means when you've got a one-goal lead with 10 minutes to go in the third period, you have to be able to lock that game down and be able to come away with that victory. And it's going to be tougher because you don't get a lot of scoring opportunities in the Western Conference. Everybody you talk to says that it's more physical, it's closer checking, and that all comes back to what you just mentioned, that being goals against and team defense. And that is definitely an area that they feel they have to improve in.
Dennis Bayak, the voice of the Winnipeg Jets. You'll hear more from Dennis later tonight, 9:30 p.m. local start time here in Winnipeg, as the Jets Young Stars will battle against the Edmonton Oilers Young Stars. Dennis, thanks very much for this.
Guys, you're very welcome. Have a good day, and we'll see you at main camp in the middle of the week.
Yeah, we'll see you next week. Looking forward to it. Thanks, Dennis.
Take care, guys.
Thanks a lot, Dennis.
Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on tsn1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment of the program is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Tonight and all next week at Rumors, Matt Falk, he's a local boy, done very well. He plays second in the World Series of Comedy in Las Vegas, and his album, Apple Pie and Scars, reached number one on the iTunes comedy charts. Let me tell you, Matt Falk is hilarious. Go see him at Rumors this week, or tonight and next week. RumorsComedyClub.com.
That's your kind of pie chart, Adrian.
Yeah, an apple pie, that's my kind of chart.
Apple Pie and Scars.
Yeah.
That's,
it just sounds funny, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's quite the title right
well,
there.
Well, I'll tell you what, not to foreshadow anything, you have a story about apples a little bit later on during this week's edition of Escapades.
That's true.
So that'll be in the last segment of the show, so you can look forward to Ezzy's apple story.
I actually have to mention something really quickly. I actually have a couple of apple trees at my house, and I actually gave Richie's mom a couple of the apples. She was very appreciative.
Yeah, the crab apple tree, the same tree that you, when I dropped you off recently, you took apples and started hucking them in my car.
That never happened.
I totally believe that happened.
Yeah, 100% happened.
Defense for the Winnipeg Jets. We only got a few minutes before
I didn't know it was an apple tree, so I didn't know what the heck was going on.
Defense for the
Let's
Winnipeg
defense,
Jets.
Let's talk defense, Drew.
To me, and I've said this really from the start of the free agency period, the Grant Klitsam as your number two left side defenseman scares the holy bejesus out of me.
Right, but okay, let's for a second here not just focus on Grant Klitsam. He obviously signed the 3-year deal, but you know we asked Dennis about this and he said that yes, the Jets are going to have a bigger commitment to team defense. But looking at this defense group as a whole, guys, last year was just an absolute mishmash, Richie, for this group. You had Bogo was injured at the beginning of the season, and Dustin Byfuglien had issues with injuries, and Tobias Enstrom missed time with injuries, and you had the unfortunate case with Zach Redmond. This year, now with a full training camp and with Jacob Trouba coming in there, this is a better opportunity for the Jets to establish their commitment to team defense just based on their D group here. And, you know, Drew, you mentioned Grant Klitsam, and, you know, everyone gets fixated on the pairings and the line combinations. And sure, that's important. I mean, you know, that's when you break down the anatomy of a hockey team, that's what it is. It's line combinations and defense pairings. And, you know, talking about Jacob Trouba, I mean, with his talent level, what he did at the University of Michigan, what he did for the U.S. at the World Junior Tournament, top defenseman of the tournament, and the sky's the limit for this guy. It's quite possible that you have a Jacob Trouba, Zach Bogosian, you know, combination. I mean, right now, I don't think anything is set in stone. I don't even think you can say Tobias Enstrom and Dustin Byfuglien are necessarily paired together because of the shortcomings with their game. And that, to me, is going to determine whether they make the playoffs. And I happen to think the Jets can and will make the playoffs this year, because I do think that Zach Bogosian, healthy for a full season, Jacob Trouba coming in. I mean, I think this guy is that good that he could be a Calder, a Rookie of the Year candidate.
But that doesn't solve the problem of who is playing those 20 minutes a game. you know, for all of Ron Hainsey's warts, and there were plenty in his game.
Yeah. He led the team in ice time last year.
He played 20 or 25 minutes a game.
Or like 25.
That has to be allocated to somebody now. And I don't know. I mean, is the Jets brain trust saying that guy is Grant Clitsam? Because Grant Clitsam got exposed as a third line defenseman on more than one occasion last year.
You know, I think he is the guy, Drew. I agree with Ezzy in terms of the Bufflin-Enstrom combination. I think that's a too risky of a combination against the talent that they're going to be facing, you know, in this division. So I think you break those guys up. You probably put Bogosian with Enstrom and try and see if this can be a combination that can go forward.
I agree.
They experimented in the past. And then it leaves you with Bufflin and, well, I mean, you've tried Bufflin and Stewart in the past, or it's going to be Bufflin and Clitsam. And then I think you're looking at Trouba and Stewart, or Trouba and Clitsam. I think those are really your combinations. I think Postman, Party, or Extra, they're on one-way deals, but they're the 7-8 guys. Called as an RFA. I mean, Hates is not coming back, obviously. Redmond's a two-way deal, so you can huck him between the AHL and the NHL. Based on signing Party, I think Redmond's back in the AHL, you know, gain more confidence and see what he can become. But when you look at those pairings, if you do answer him Bogosian, then you're looking at, do you think Bufflin and Stewart are a better combination than Bufflin and Clitsam? I don't think so. Stewart likes to be aggressive in the neutral zone sometimes to hit. He's not great with the puck. Obviously, Bufflin's great with the puck. They're both not. Like, Bufflin's overweight, so he's not a great skater because of, I think, the weight issue that holds him back. Stewart isn't a very good skater. You know, he's a stay-at-home, shot blocking, heart and soul kind of guy who's great in the room and all that stuff, right? As far as we can tell. But, you know, do you want to bring in a young guy like Trouba with a guy like Stewart who will kind of protect him, show him the ropes and all that stuff? That's the other perspective. Or do you want to put him with Clitsam?
Right. Or do you want to elevate him to possibly play on your second pairing with Dustin Bufflin? And that brings up the same question.
But hold on, Izzy. Who's playing left side? I mean, it's not that these guys can't play the other side. The problem is when you're Jacob Trouba and you're adjusting to the National Hockey League.
Right.
Can you go play the other side when you have to? You can't even get acclimated on your own side? And can Dustin Bufflin play the other side? I mean, I guess conceivably, but that's, you know, it's there's a reason these guys play on their strong sides.
It's
picking
usually
the puck off the boards, a bunch of other reasons why, right? Well, in your own zone, if you're just think about it this way: if you're in your own zone and Dustin Bufflin, the puck gets shot on the left side, you're picking that puck off your backhand to your forehand. Not an easy thing to do. You're getting put into a vulnerable position at times. So these are considerations that need to be taken into account. You have three left-handed shooting guys. You have three right-handed shooting guys. So naturally, they're going to go on their strong sides. Then I think the question is, and it doesn't mean you have to lock in Enstrom and Bogosian. I just don't think Enstrom and Bufflin can play together because they're not good enough defensively.
I think what's happened with Tobias Enstrom and Dustin Bufflin is that because of the chemistry that they've had dating back to the year before the Jets came back with the Atlanta Thrashers, on the power play, I mean, it's not even a question. Tobias Enstrom and Dustin Bufflin are your top power play pairing, right? I think you guys would agree with that. But as far as your everyday unit here, I mean, the Winnipeg Jets are going to have to be better, period, at preventing goals. That's just the way it is. And that's everybody. That's the forwards.
That's
the defenseman.
Yeah.
That's Pavlik's got to be better. But as far as these pairings go, I mean, you're going to have to decide here who works. Like, who's going to be your Brent Seabrook and your Duncan Keith shutdown pair? You know, who's going to be your third pairing? And like Richie said, are you going to put Trouba and Stewart out there so, you know, Trouba comes in? And I look at Jacob Trouba. I think Jacob Trouba could arguably be better than Dougie Hamilton. I'm a big fan of Dougie Hamilton, but look at Dougie Hamilton. At points on the Boston Bruins, he was playing second pair. Mm-hmm. At points, he was playing third pair. At points, he was in the press box. So, and you'd have to think that Paul Postma and Adam Party, pardon me, it's possible that when they come into the lineup, they're going to be replacing Jacob Trouba. If you look at all the defensemen, the one guy that is the biggest question mark as far as where he's going to play is Jacob Trouba because he's a rookie, right? So I think, you know, it's going into training camp, these are the huge question marks. And it's going to tell us a lot in the exhibition games and early on in the season who's going to play with who. Because right now I think you don't even have one pair that's guaranteed. I think you really only have maybe that top line. And that's why this year's training camp, it's so important, right?
It is.
I would agree with that. I mean, I think the training camp will and the exhibition games will especially see how the defense plays out, because that is still, I think, a big question mark when it comes to the Winnipeg Jets. Let's go to break. When we come back, George Johnson of the Calgary Herald is going to join us to talk about the Flames hiring Brian Burke as president of hockey operations. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
On the road again.
1 hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We go out to Calgary and welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show our good friend from the Calgary Herald, George Johnson. George, good afternoon. Thanks very much for joining us.
No problem.
George, you know, let's start. Obviously, we brought you on to talk about the Brian Burke move, the hiring of Brian Burke. You know, why did the Flames think that they needed to make this move?
Well, I mean, you can interpret it in a number of ways. The one we would like to believe, but is the furthest from the absolute truth, is that during a long, cold, hard winter that they're going to have with this hockey team here, he's going to blow up 3 or 4 times and make our lives a whole heck of a lot easier, which is, you know, I mean, when Berkey loses it, no one loses it quite like him. And the fact that he and Kevin Lowe and Craig McTavish are already brawling from their days before with the Edmonton Oilers, that kind of gives a little more of a sparkle to the old Battle of Alberta that's kind of become a bloated, tired, kind of wasted old rivalry. So hopefully he'll punch some zing back into that. But it's a really weird kind of a deal. I mean, they were looking for somebody to go over top of Jay Feaster and underneath Ken King, the president. And they tried for Brendan Shanahan. He took one look at it and said, "No, thank you very much." and now it's Brian. The way that they describe it is that he's just going to be another voice in the room to try and add a little bit of his experience into what is going to probably be a long, hard rebuild here. And that's until we see something else, until we see, you know, maybe a blood sacrifice of Jay Feaster and you have Brian Burke there to slide right into it, or Bob Hartley and you have Robbie Fedoruk out in Abbotsford now to slide right into that. Until that happens, I guess we have to take them at their word.
George, why did Brendan Shanahan turn down the opportunity?
I don't know. I haven't talked to him about it. I think that, you know, a lot of times, the first opportunity you have, you see it with coaches in the league. If it doesn't go particularly well, you're kind of have the mark of Cain on you for the rest of your life. And, this is going to be a difficult situation. I don't think there's any question about it. He's a new guy. He would have been taking over a team that is starting from ground zero, has finally admitted that they have to start from ground zero. He's going to be playing a lot of kids this year. He's playing in a tougher division. Mm-hmm. Is going to lose a lot of hockey games, and there's going to be a lot of frustration in this city, no matter how much they might want to say, "Oh, we're in it with you for the rebuild. Oh, yes, we are." You know, that kind of thing. That's easier to say, and then Valentine's Day rolls around, and you know, you can't even find them. You know, you need the Woods Hole Oceanographic people to find them in the standings. So I think he looked at it and said, "You know what, that's not quite what I want for my first job. I want something that's going to happen a little bit quicker than this." Brian Burke, he's got a track record, and from that standpoint, I think he believes he can come in here and, you know, there won't be the same kind of pressure on him or the organization to get it done that quickly.
George, you're at the press conference earlier this week when the Calgary Flames introduced Brian Burke, and to me, watching that press conference, he was obviously saying all the right things, and he was saying mm-hmm. that Jay Feaster is still the general manager, and you know he's not going to be in the spotlight. He's not going to be talking to the media all the time. And it seemed like to me, you know, everyone could you could almost see how Brian Burke was almost, you know, taking over the reins here. But at the end of the day, and despite what Brian Burke said and what Jay Feaster was saying, does Jay Feaster at this point have the ultimate decision making ability?
Well, I don't think he does, and I don't think that that's what came out of the press thing. I mean, basically, what the deal is Jay reports to Brian. And let's face it, Brian Burke has never been one that really played really well with others. I mean, he's a one-man show. He's got the drum and the cymbals and the woodwinds and everything, and he plays the tunes all by himself. So, you know, as you said, it's really easy to say it when you're sitting there on day one and everybody's smiling and you haven't lost any hockey games and there's no media pressure and the people aren't all ticked off about the fact that, you know, you're 2-8 to start the season. It's another thing to have it to stay that way when things go south. And so I think we're going to have to give it at least until Thanksgiving to see just how it's shaking down. If he doesn't explode 3 or 4 times this season, I'll be wildly surprised and even more disappointed.
You know, speaking of Jay Feaster, George, this is kind of reminds me of when Jay Feaster was brought on as assistant GM. Everybody kind of thought eventually he was going to be the guy to take over. Do you see some similarities there?
Well, the similarities Jay was just an unproven, here was a guy with no hockey experience. He was a lawyer. He came in. This is a different, you're dealing with an entirely different beast here. I mean, this is Brian Burke. this is a guy who really, has called the shots for his entire managerial career here. And he can sit there on whenever, I can't remember when the press conference was, now I'm getting too old, but he can sit there and say, oh, I'm tired and I want to step back, and no, I don't enjoy sparring with you guys and all that kind of stuff. But I think we all know different.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're joined by Calgary Herald columnist George Johnson talking about the Flames hiring of Brian Burke. George, Brian Burke is president of hockey operations. Ken King is president and mm-hmm. CEO of the Flames. Can they mm-hmm. coexist?
Well, I think part of what this is doing is this is, because of the fact that the holdings, as you mentioned them, now it's, the Abbotsford Heat, the National Lacrosse League Roughnecks, the WHL Hitmen, the CFL Stampeders, there's a lot of stuff there. And this is a town that is now watching Hamilton soon to get a new stadium. Winnipeg just got a new football stadium. Regina's getting a new stadium. Suddenly McMahon here is going to look like, the doddering old grandpa of the CFL stadiums. So they're looking to get a new stadium. They're looking to get a new rink, as we all know what would happen in Edmonton. And there has been rumors swirling around. And we threw them out there the other day, and since Ken didn't call me back and yell at me, then I assume that there must be something in them, that there's a good chance that they will try to put together a bid for the 2022 Winter Olympics. And in that way, it's a much easier sell on a rink and a stadium. And that's how we got the Saddle Dome in the first place. That's how McMahon got a massive upgrade in 1988. And if that's the case, if they're going to be going after some bigger fish like that, then they're going to need Ken to do a lot of that. And I think that's why Brian was brought in, besides the fact that he's a hockey guy and Ken is not, is that it will free Ken King up to look at a little bit more of the umbrella holdings that they do have and maybe what they're trying to do down the road.
You know, George, are the reports true that Brian Burke doesn't have a term limit on his contract?
You can't get anybody to say anything. We've heard this stuff. I don't know. I wish I could tell you, but I don't know.
And if in the case that he does not really have a limit, why would mm-hmm. that be? Why would that be the case?
Well, you would think that if that is the case, then they've agreed to do this, but there's going to be some kind of a feeling out process involved in it, and see how it does shake down.
George, you're in Calgary, obviously. I don't have to tell you that. If I did have to tell you that, then...
and it's raining here again.
Oh, it is, okay.
Lord almighty, they can't cut us a break. Anyway.
Nice and sunny and hot here, so hopefully that stuff comes west.
Winnipeg's home to me, and I remember those summers fondly.
Well, it's also supposed to snow sometimes Tomorrow, though, George. So.
There you go.
How has this hiring been received in Calgary? Because, we know how it's been received in Winnipeg and everywhere. Yeah. Obviously, it was a bit of a shocker, but the most important place where it was received was Calgary. How has it been received there?
Well, I think that everybody just kind of looks at it and goes, well, that's lovely. But I think what people look at it in two ways. They look at it as, this is the big name signing, quote-unquote, that they couldn't make in free agency. They were never going to attract you know, a big name UFA here. There was just no way it was going to happen, even if they wanted to. I mean, there was talk about Le Cavalier because of Jay Feaster's ties to him in Tampa Bay and stuff like that. But if you look at the situation and you think that there's going to be 4 years of 3 or 4 years of at least of intense pain, I mean, you're not going to get. So this is their big name. This is their big name signing. This is the guy this is the guy that we couldn't get in unrestricted free agency. I think if you look at it the other way, people look at it and saying, well, you know, Brian Burke is a guy who defends his players to the absolute death. He just does. And that he's going to, in a lot of ways, he's going to deflect a lot of the attention, or at least some of the attention, away from the problems that they're having on the ice. So how are they looking at it? I think people are looking at it, I think, bemused, and I think there's certainly a wait and see attitude as to how, because you hire Brian Burke, it doesn't mean they're going to get 10 more points in the standings and they're actually going to be pushing for a playoff spot. That's not going to happen. So there has to be other factors involved in it.
Do you think Brian Burke, George, do you think Brian Burke is going to hire, some of his guys? Because generally, he moves from Vancouver, Anaheim, Toronto. He brings his guys along. Is it a matter of time before that happens?
Well, you know, that's everybody. We were joking here. It's when, you know, what time does Ron Wilson arrive? You know, I mean, I just can't even imagine that kind of a winter. I think eventually, I mean, it always happens. I mean, eventually, guys that are in charge, and if he stays in charge, if he is the hockey operations guy and he's ahead of Jay, eventually you would think he's going to bring in his own people, especially, you know, under the circumstances where it's not going to be pretty here for a while. And we all know there have to be blood sacrifices in these things, even when you're rebuilding, and people understand you're rebuilding. You can't get rid of your young players, so you have to go other places and make replacements. So I would think that's certainly part of it, and I would think, you know, down the road, you know, that it will happen. Rarely in rebuilds do the guys that start the rebuild, are they around to actually enjoy the fruits of them working. I mean, it rarely happens.
George, we'll let you go on this last question. In terms of the Flames history, how bad is this team going to be? And then secondly, is there any way this rebuild in Calgary isn't at least a minimum of 3 years in length?
Well, I mean, how bad? I mean, there's different kinds of bad. I mean, there's rebuilding bad, and then there's old veteran bad, and we've seen both of them here. I mean, you got to remember this is a team that has been past the first round of the playoffs once since 1989.
Wow.
Lord, I was a kid then. I mean, you know, I'm old enough to remember it because I covered it. But they've been, outside of 2004, they've never been past the first round. So there's been a lot of suffering here over the years, particularly when playoff times roll around. It's going to be a different thing. I think what they're going to have is they're going to have somebody step up and not be Taylor Hall and not be Jordan Eberle, because they don't have anybody like that. But they have to have one of the young guys, whether it's Monahan, whether it's Berchi, whether it's TJ Brody, whoever it is. I think to lessen the pain, you have to have hope. And they're going to have one of these guys step up and be a white knight. And even if you're losing hockey games, people look at him and say, yeah, it's going to be better down the road because of him. And I think that they have to have one of those guys emerge this year to sort of lessen the sting of what's going to be a long year.
George Johnson from the Calgary Herald, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Hopefully we'll see you in Winnipeg when the Flames visit for the first time this year.
Actually, I am coming in, and I can't wait.
Yeah, terrific, George. We'll look forward to it.
Right.
Have a good one. Thanks very much.
Bye-bye.
Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on tsn1290.ca.
Quiet CCR that you're queuing up there, Timmy. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Let it breathe, Drew. Let it breathe.
I'm letting it breathe. I think it's taking its sweet time to breathe. It's gasping for breath at this point.
There you go.
Anyways, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. This segment of the program is brought to you by our good friends at the Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba. The CGA Association of Manitoba is the largest, fastest growing, and most diverse accounting body in the province. Did you know that CGAs are among the top 5% of income earners in Canada? with an average yearly salary of $72,000 for new graduates. For more information, contact the CGA Association of Manitoba at cga-manitoba.org. The Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba, we see more than numbers. Gentlemen, does Brian Burke see more than just the president of hockey operations in his future in Calgary?
It's pretty interesting that during that press conference, and I imagine you guys watched it as well, he was kind of almost justifying the managerial structure and explaining that even though it's not common, Richie, that it can work. And, you know, his title, president of hockey operations, he's above Jay Feaster. The reality is, guys, the Calgary Flames ownership group, Ken King, CEO, they've brought Brian Burke in because possibly they need someone else to help Jay Feaster out. And, you know, we asked George Johnson, we just had him on, and we asked him about the rebuild. Is it going to be 3 years? I do not believe the Calgary Flames want this to take as long as it has taken in Edmonton. And I don't think the Edmonton Oilers thought it was going to take this long. I thought last year that they weren't going to take the next step, but I think that they thought they were going to take the next step. But at the end of the day, they've brought in Brian Burke, and you can't help but think that if things don't go well over the next year, that he's not taking over. Jay Feaster's out, and he brings in somebody to fill that role, whether you want to call it, you know, assistant general manager, Richie, or he becomes general manager. You know, Brian Burke, George Johnson said it, is a guy that is not easy to get along with and has always had absolute control, right? So I think that this says a lot to how they think Jay Feaster, you know, he's on it. I would say that Jay Feaster is at the very least on a short leash.
At the end of the day, Brian Burke already has last call. So I think it's really how comfortable Jay Feaster is with that and how much more responsibility Brian Burke wants. Whatever Jay Feaster does now goes through Brian Burke.
Sure.
So does he like, he said in the press conference, I don't really want to go to Rush. I don't want to do that day-to-day stuff. He wants the big picture stuff, which is fine. And if he's content with that and Jay Feaster doesn't feel like his decisions are being overrided at every opportunity, then it probably will work.
Well,
it's likely not, though. I mean, Jay Feaster is a guy who has confidence, personality. You know, he's sure of himself, and he's kind of brought his guys in, John Weisbrod, and I think he's got Chris Snow working there, and they kind of do things a little bit differently. And Brian Burke's a little bit more of a traditional guy. So I think there's a little bit of a disconnect there that will eventually rear its ugly head, I think. I don't think this works out long term.
So Burke is sort of in a no-lose situation.
Yeah, of course.
Because if he's got final authority, and he does because he's Jay Feaster's boss, and Jay Feaster and Burke signs off on a move or whatever move, and it doesn't work, Feaster takes the fall.
Yeah.
Feaster's the fall guy, even though Burke also had input into it. So, you know, what's the worst-case scenario for Brian Burke? You know, think something doesn't work out, and then he gets to slide into that position, and it seems as if he's been, you know, hasn't been there the whole time. I mean, he's really the puppet master behind this whole operation now.
Yeah, he is, Drew, and I think for I mean, when you're at the top of the chain, and when you're Brian Burke, and you're calling the shots on the hockey end, and Ken King is not really having an opportunity to get involved, you know, with hockey personnel decisions, then you know. By all accounts, you're really the GM. You're more of a hands-off GM, but you're the GM. Now, Dave Nonis did a lot of stuff for Brian Burke, too, over the course of their relationship in Vancouver, in Anaheim, in Toronto. So maybe it'll be similar to that, but they don't go back as far. Jay Feaster and Brian Burke know each other from, you know, the days of Jay Feaster running Hershey and Brian Burke being in other organizations, having his hands, you know, and having a play, you know, dealing with teams in the AHL. But him and Dave Nonis are, like, best buds. And it's a lot easier to work that relationship when you know, at the end of the day, where you stand with Dave Nonis. He's taken the jobs in Vancouver and Toronto after Burke's exited, but Burke has been okay with that.
Right.
It's not the situation here. And Brian Burke, apparently, and George wasn't sure if this is true, but we've read that there's no end to the contract. So Brian Burke kind of has this deal where he'll be there for a while, see if it works, and if it does work, I'm sure he's getting paid a boatload of money. Flames can certainly afford it, even with this, you know, the flood disaster and all that stuff, and they'll have to deal with. So it's no lose for Brian Burke. The lose is if there is, it's not no lose. Let me correct myself, because you mentioned before, if he makes a decision, say comes to Jay Feaster comes, forward and makes a decision, and Burke says, okay, I think that's a great decision. I mean, some of that responsibility will fall on Brian Burke.
Yeah, but he'll get to fire Feaster before he'd get fired himself.
Maybe, but it already will cast a certain light on him in terms of his reputation in the Calgary area.
Sure,
if he expedites this rebuilding like he did in Toronto, it'd be trouble.
If they trade, if they trade for, we were joking about it before the show, if they trade for Phil Kessel and they trade Sean Monahan for Phil Kessel or something like that.
I think it's really interesting, the hire, and it did surprise me a little bit. The thing that's, the most interesting about it is that Brian Burke's stamp on the Vancouver Canucks, on the Anaheim Ducks, on the Toronto Maple Leafs is undeniable. If you look at how he's constructed those teams, whether it's the Sedins in Vancouver or who he drafted while he was the GM of the Toronto Maple Leafs, as soon as he was hired, and that's what we were asking George Johnson about, as far as that press conference, and that's why it kind of created this stir, because you're talking about Brian Burke. I don't think anybody else has that amount of respect and that kind of aura and standing in the hockey world. He's done it all, right? Like, Brian Burke is, he walks into a room, right? Everybody knows who Brian Burke is. And that's what's fascinating to me about this, is that now you've hired a guy, one of the most powerful guys in the NHL, and a guy that has just an excellent, just hockey track record. He knows hockey, right? Richie mentioned that he's old school, and I love that. And I love the fact that he says, I'm not going to change. He's stubborn, and he's willing to tell you about that. Like, he's just, I think, a great guy for hockey. Like, I want to see Brian Burke. He's always interesting. And I think that's what's so fascinating about it, is that you have a guy who's now come into Calgary, and just based on what he's done in the NHL, that means that the power structure has changed. Now Jay Feaster's lost that power structure.
Yes.
They brought somebody else in because they want results. And they're not going to be good this year. The Flames are to rebuild. But I don't think that they want to wait 5 years to turn this thing around. I just don't believe that.
Jay Feaster's lost his power. And they don't. My biggest concern, if I'm a Flames fan, is this: if you don't think Jay Feaster should be the guy in charge, and you need somebody above him to make the ultimate decision, then why is Jay Feaster even making those day to day decisions?
Fair point. Do you buy the argument from Kevin Lowe that the hiring of Brian Burke will, reignite the Battle of Alberta?
I have a problem, Richie. I'll let you get in here for a second. What? Did the Battle of Alberta ever go anywhere? Like, when he says that, sure, the Oilers weren't good last year, the Flames weren't good last year, but did it ever go anywhere? It's not like Calgary and Edmonton have a love affair with each other.
They've both been terrible for so long. The games are awful.
Yeah.
I agree, but I'm what I'm saying is, when they play each other, it's not like there's love lost there,
obviously.
Sorry,
if the Flames are awful for the next 5 years, the fact that Brian Burke is the president of hockey operations is not going to ignite the battle.
Exactly.
That the Battle of Alberta will become relevant again and will become interesting again when both teams are good and battling for a playoff position.
Right.
That's pretty much what it is. I don't see that, Brian. It's not like they're, Brian Burke and Kevin Lowe are actually finally going to have their barn fight now.
Well, that's what it is, right?
That'd be great.
That would reignite the Battle of Alberta.
That's what he's doing. He's stirring the pot, and everybody remembers what happened with Dustin Penner, right?
Well,
that's what we're referring to there.
But, how about you make your teams better and let them do the battle on the ice? I don't want to see two old general managers fighting. I have no interest in that.
I think the listeners of TSN 1290 might want to see, Drew, me and you in a barn fight.
Yeah.
But I don't think they want to see, Jay Feaster or Brian Burke or Kevin Lowe. They'd like to see us, throwing, hay at each other or something.
You'd start eating the hay. That would be the problem. Why don't we go to break? When we come back, Scott Powers from ESPN Chicago is going to join us to talk about the signings the Blackhawks made. You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You've been listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch The Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and tsn1290.ca.